Welcome to the Biochar podcast presented by Antbig. Our podcast features experts speaking about biochar, how it's made, its uses and applications, and the impact it has socially, economically, and environmentally. Antbig is a not-for-profit industry group, and as a global leader in biochar, assists companies, governments, and institutions in the effective production and use of biochar. Antbig works to streamline education, research, collaboration, and the commercial uptake of biochar and wood vinegar. Our aim is to help create a more sustainable future, greater economic prosperity, job opportunities, and an improved quality of life for all of us. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our podcast series entitled Biochar and the Carbon Drawdown Decade. I'm Don Coyne. I'm the current CEO of ANZ Biochar Industry Group, and I'm joined today by Sam Scani, our cluster manager. On today's episode, we will be discussing a scientific paper just out entitled How Biochar Works and When It Doesn't, a review of mechanisms controlling soil and plant responses to biochar.
To help us discuss the topic, we have Annette Cowie from New South Wales DPI and University of New England. Annette has a background in soil science and plant nutrition with particular interest in sustainable resource management. Annette was a lead author in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, so the IPCC, Special Report on Climate Change and Land, and is the lead author in the IPCC's Sixth Assessment Report.
Welcome, Annette.
Thank you, Don and Sam. It's wonderful to have the opportunity to talk to you today about this paper that we're very pleased to now see in print.
Great. All right. So, Annette, you've been involved with biochar for probably a couple of decades now. And can you briefly explain your role at the New South Wales DPI and UNE when it comes to biochar research and development?
Yeah, my role is basically about translating science into policy. So I'm with the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries in the climate branch, and we work on developing methods, for example, for greenhouse gas inventories and for emissions trading, such as through the Emissions Reduction Fund. And we work on identifying and researching mitigation strategies and estimating the potential abatement that they could deliver. So biochar is one of the things that we've looked at very closely. And through the University of New England, I work with students who are doing research into particular aspects of biochar science, such as the effects of biochar on greenhouse gas emissions from soil.
Great, thank you. So what inspired you and your team, Annette, to write this paper on biochar and why now?
Well, New South Wales DPI has been involved in biochar research since the very early days. The early days were about 20 years ago when scientists became interested in trying to understand biochar. And there's been a lot of research undertaken in that last 20 years, about 15,000 papers or more published now. So there's a huge amount of information out there. But despite that, there's quite a bit of uncertainty and lack of confidence in potential biochar users and also amongst policymakers. And that's come about because it is a fairly new science and also because people have perceived variable results. So in the literature, you see a wide range of responses to biochar, and that's led to that, I guess, lack of understanding and confidence in biochar. So we brought together an international team. We have 17 authors from across the world, US, China, Spain, Germany, for example, who have taken on this task of summarising the current understanding of biochar science. Because we wanted to get across the message that actually we do have a good understanding of biochar and we can explain why the results vary. And it's all to do with the fact that biochar itself varies. So you get different results depending on what biochar you use and how you use it.
Well, it's a really important piece of work there. And what would you say are the key and most consistent properties and benefits of biochar that came out of the paper?
Well, overwhelmingly, it's about the persistence of biochar. So biochar decomposes very slowly in the soil, and it has really interesting chemical and physical properties, which mean it can improve soil health and increase plant growth.
Fantastic. All right. And can you summarise the key components of the mechanisms of biochar effects on soil and plants?
Yeah, thanks, Don. There's three key things that are happening. There's the physical properties. So biochar is highly porous, it has very high surface area, and that means it can absorb gases, it can provide habitat for microbes, it can increase the water holding capacity of soils. And then it has really interesting chemical properties. On its surface, particularly as it ages in the soil, it can have both negative and positive charges at the same time, which means it can adsorb nutrients, for example, increasing the nutrient holding capacity, reducing nutrient leaching. And it also acts as a catalyst in the soil. So it can store and release nutrients, as I said, but also electrons as they're needed by plant processes and microbes. For example, it can reduce the energy required for a plant to transport nutrients across its cell membrane to take nutrients up into the roots. Really interesting reactions occur in the rhizosphere. That's the zone around the plant roots, and that's where the nutrients are taken up, where organic substances are released by the roots, and where the microbes concentrate. So it's the mechanisms occurring in all those places that are important.
Mm-hmm. And could you just explain the three stages of these mechanisms of biochar effects on soil and plants?
Yeah, in the paper, we put a lot of the focus on describing these interactions, the physical, chemical and biological interactions between biochar, soil and plants. And so it's quite a long and complicated explanation, and we've divided it up into three stages. The first stage, the short-term reactions occur in the first 1 to 3 weeks, and that's when the soluble components of the biochar dissolve, and these can affect seed germination and seedling growth. Sometimes positively and sometimes negatively. What we see is what we call hormesis. At very high rates, you can get detrimental effects, but at lower doses of biochar, you can see beneficial effects on seedling germination and growth. Then the second stage goes from about 1 to 6 months, and we call that the active surface development stage, when plant roots also concentrate near the biochar, the root hairs interact with the biochar, and that's when biochar can affect crop growth through its effects on nutrient and water availability, and it can affect pathogens, so affects plant health as well. And then the final stage is after about 6 months, as biochar ages in the soil, it interacts with the soil minerals and organic matter. You get a layer of organic matter forms over the biochar surface, and that really changes the properties of the surface. And also the biochar attracts soil minerals like clays and organic matter, and it forms small aggregates. And these protect the biochar from decomposition and also trap and protect organic molecules that are released by the plant roots. So that this organic matter isn't decomposed, and these aggregates are a really important function of the longevity of biochar in the soil.
Okay, thanks, Annette. Can you discuss the role of biochar in supporting food security?
Yeah, well, the effects in the literature on plant yields vary quite widely, as I mentioned before, depending on the biochar properties. And the biochar properties are highly dependent on the feedstock that you make the biochar out of and the pyrolysis conditions, particularly the temperature. But in general, the average yield effects of biochar are an increase of about 10 to 40%. Certainly, there are much larger increases in plant yields that have been published in the literature. So that's the overwhelming benefit to food security, basically increasing plant growth, particularly in parts of the world where you have low yields, where you have in the tropics, for example, with highly acidic soils and sandy soils in the drylands. Biochar is particularly effective in improving yields in those environments. And also it increases the resilience of agricultural systems to drought. So because it increases the water holding capacity, particularly in the drylands, it can help us to fight against climate change. We expect drought to be much more frequent under climate change, so it's an adaptation measure there. And then I mentioned that it can improve plant health. So biochar improves the capacity of plants to fight against disease. And another important thing is that it immobilizes heavy metals in the soil, so it reduces the uptake by plants, and therefore it also improves the quality of food. And there are many parts of the world that are affected by heavy metal contamination, and so the food is also affected. And so application of biochar can reduce that food security issue as well.
That's a really great summary of how it can help in supporting food security. And you mentioned a bit about climate change in there, and I'm just wondering if you could just touch a bit on, you know, what the paper highlights are the effects on climate change mitigation.
Well, the most important thing there is the persistence of biochar. So if you take organic matter and you pyrolyze it, turn it into biochar and put it into the soil, that stabilizes the carbon in the organic matter, and it can last for hundreds to thousands of years. So that's the most important thing. If you take organic matter that would have decomposed, turn it into biochar, put it into the soil, you're taking carbon from the atmosphere and safely storing it in the soil. But there are other benefits as well, because I talked about the fact that the biochar attracts newly released organic matter from the plant roots and stops it from decomposing. It does the same for existing soil organic matter. So you find that having added the biochar, you continue to increase the soil carbon levels in the soil. So that is an added mitigation benefit. And then also it has interesting effects on the powerful greenhouse gases, methane and nitrous oxide, which are often released by the soil. So nitrogen is released as nitrous oxide from many of our cropping soils, and methane is released from flooded soils such as paddies. But we find that when you apply biochar, it often decreases the rate of release of those powerful greenhouse gases. Also, when you add biochar to composting organic matter, such as manures or to animal bedding, you again reduce the releasing of those non-CO2 greenhouse gases, methane and nitrous oxide. And if you use biomass for biochar rather than, for example, spreading raw manure or putting food waste in landfill, you avoid those greenhouse gas emissions as well. So all of that adds up to a positive effect on the climate from biochar.
Thanks, Annette. And can you now talk about biochar's role in the circular economy?
Well, our current agricultural systems rely very much on chemical fertilisers, particularly nitrogen fertilisers, and these release greenhouse gases in their production and also in their use. And our systems transfer nutrients from farmland to cities where we eat the food, and those nutrients often end up in our sewage systems. What we really need to do is to close the nutrient loop and get those nutrients back onto our farmland. So if we pyrolyze our biosolids, the sewage sludge, and organic residues like food wastes, this is a really effective way to get those nutrients back onto the farmland. Most of the nutrients in the biomass are retained when we turn it into biochar. Nitrogen is an exception, but the others are retained in the biochar. And the pyrolysis process destroys pathogens and the organic contaminants that are increasingly a worry in our biosolids. And also the product is easier to handle. Biochar is easier to transport and apply than, for example, dewatered sewage sludge. This is a great way of implementing our policies in the circular economy, getting nutrients back onto the farmland, making the best use of our organic resources. And there's the added benefit that when we use biochar we retain the nutrients, we increase the nutrient holding capacity of the soil, we reduce the amount of fertilizer that the plants need, so we also reduce the requirements for making that chemical fertilizer.
Really important. What do you think is the most important message that you would like to get through in the key discussion makers at COP26 coming up in Glasgow?
Well, what I want to do is to convince them that we do know enough about biochar. We have a lot of science out there now. We've summarised it here in this paper. I want them to be confident that biochar can be an important part of the climate solution. It can provide that carbon dioxide removal, the drawdown that we need to take carbon out of the atmosphere, because we're not going to be able to meet the goals of the Paris Agreement unless we do implement carbon dioxide removal strategies. And biochar is the safest way to do that. It stores the carbon safely in the soil, and it provides those extra benefits that are described in tackling our key challenges, such as in improving food security, reducing land degradation, and supporting adaptation to climate change.
Thanks, Annette. And look, finally, if you haven't already covered it, the theme of our conference this year is biochar in the carbon drawdown decade. So how do you see biochar's role in soil, particularly the agricultural ecosystem, which is highlighted in the How Biochar Works paper, playing out by 2030 and beyond?
Well, there's rapidly increasing interest in biochar from those who are looking for carbon offsets as a carbon dioxide removal strategy. There's certainly increasing recognition, particularly amongst the corporates, of the need for this. And biochar is seen as less vulnerable than planting trees, for example, or conventional soil carbon management. And it's also favoured because it's a more natural solution rather than something like direct air capture with CCS, carbon capture and storage, geosequestration. So, and there's also growing interest in its agronomic benefits and increasing confidence now that we do know enough about biochar to be able to choose the right biochar for our site. And we're also tackling issues with our code of practice, for example, in managing the quality control aspects. And so I'm anticipating great things for biochar in the coming decade.
Right. Thank you. So are we. Thanks very much for sharing with us today, Annette. What is the best way for people to get in contact with you?
Well, you can contact me through my email address at the Department of Primary Industries. So that's annette.cowie@dpi.nsw.gov.au.
Great. Thank you. And thank you to Sam Zagami, our cluster manager, for co-hosting today, and to all our viewers and listeners for joining us. We hope you found it valuable. This interview will be uploaded into ANSBIG's Vimeo and YouTube channels, as well as Spotify and Apple Podcasts. So you can subscribe to that through your phone and on the internet. So thank you again, and until next time, ciao.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Sam.